This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Is Dean there? It's Charlie here. Interesting. I was expecting to hear Dean's voice. He's in the studio, as far as I know. And I'm at home broadcasting on Skype. Hope we're not talking over top of each other right now, because I can't actually hear him for some reason. Anyhow, let me zero right in on the number one priority here, which is there are some upcoming events. The meetings continue to happen. The Hort Societies are active, mostly through Zoom. One would be our favorite Riverdale Horticultural Society, who are meeting this Wednesday, December the 8th. And there's a regular Zoom meeting, 7 p.m. The speaker is Michael Erdman, and the topic is cheap and cheery Christmas decor. If you attend this meeting, you have a chance to win one of these cheap and cheery Christmas decorations that Michael's going to make. So for more information, www.riverdalehorticultural, that's one word, riverdalehorticultural.ca. And the other meeting that's happening is the Agent Court Garden Club. They're very active. They're a fun group, too. If you like to get involved with some fun people, tune in with the Agent Court Garden Club. That's Monday, December 13th. Again, it's a Zoom meeting at 7 p.m. And what else? Email. You don't even need to join the club. They love hearing from everybody. The speaker is Dave Chapman, and he's going to be speaking about Niagara Falls, nature, and weather, and I guess all the connections thereof. So a quick email to cheryl.penner@hotmail.com will work just fine to get you the Zoom link to get into that particular meeting. So do it if you can. Phone numbers, quickly. I'm going to give you some phone numbers, and hopefully you will give us a call, and hopefully we will also figure out what's going on here, because I'm floating around by myself in Prince Edward County. I want to hear what's going on in your garden. Tips and tricks. Local, 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740. Back right after this.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey there, Charlie. How are you?
I'm great. Nice to hear your voice. Where Dean is located in the studio?
I am, yeah. I'm in the Zoomerplex. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, good.
You can hear me now?
I can, yes.
Excellent. So I got the garden wings here, too, you know, for any first-time callers, and I think we have some people calling in, but I did want to give out the numbers again. So if you're in Toronto, 416-360-0740, or, of course, anywhere in Toronto, anywhere outside of Toronto, I should say, 1-866-740-4740. We want you to call often, call early, and, of course, one question per call, please. How's your week been, Charles?
It's been really good. We went from a winter wonderland into mildness and rain and warmth. And now we've got some more stuff blowing in as I sit in my office and watch things turning white again, which is lovely. Give me snow. I mean, the garden loves snow. So, you know, if it's going to be winter, let's have snow.
That's sure. Yeah, of course. And I've learned, you know, from you already, you know, that helps to insulate everything, right? So that snow is really important.
It is for sure. And listen, I gave you some homework, and I gave myself the same homework. We're going to come up with some good kind of ideas, gifts for gardeners. I'm wondering if you have one you'd like to share.
Well, I did. You know what? I found this tool online, which kind of intrigued me. Are you familiar with what they call a Hori Hori tool?
I am, actually, yeah.
Okay, and it looks kind of neat. It's this, a knife and a saw and a trowel, and you can even use it for hammering stakes in, apparently, to the ground.
Spell that for everybody. How do you spell that?
So it's H-O-R-I, H-O-R-I.
Right.
So the Hori Hori tool.
Japan originally.
Yeah. But I was curious what you thought about it, whether you were better to stick with a set of separate tools or whether this is actually a good deal.
You know what? I think everybody has their own sort of favorite tools. I know I get burdened if I carry too many tools into the garden, but I have some favorites, and a number of them are multi-purpose, like you say. You know, they dig, they cut, they do all kinds of things. And your soil matters too, right? Some of us are working in a nice loose soil, and we can really easily dig. And then some of us are working in serious clay, or, you know, just really hard to get through soil, and the tools bend, and, you know, it's just not a good thing. So everyone's got to kind of figure out what's going to work best for them.
Right. Listen, Charlie, we've already got the lines are going. So, you know what? I would love to go to calling from Wyerton. We've got Dawn on the line. How are you this morning, Dawn?
Diane.
Oh, sorry. No, I think we're going to Diane, actually.
Okay.
Diane. Sorry, Diane from Dorchester. How are you, Diane?
Yes, I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We're great.
Okay. I'm calling in because I listened to Charlie faithfully, and I had my husband slugging it out there trying to do leaves, then we got the snow. And we never got that last fertilizer on Charlie, and we had top dressed in September. And I'm just afraid we want to top dress again in the spring. So since we've missed this fertilizer now, because we still have... He was afraid that the leaves, you know, covered too much of the grass, and so there wouldn't be any purpose in putting that fertilizer down. It'd be a waste. So when can we, at the earliest, put it in the spring so that we can top dress again without interfering with fertilizer on the grass?
Well, I think the first thing to think about, Diane, is did you get a chance, or your husband get a chance, to remove the leaves from the lawn?
Most of them, not all of them, but we've got 11 trees of our own, and we've got a few, and we do rake them. And a few neighbors have oak trees and some other trees, and they think, well, the neighbors like their leaves, so they don't rake, and it blows to everybody else's property.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, if nothing else, do your best to remove all leaves from lawns.
Okay.
No problem, leaves in the garden, but leaves on the lawn will suffocate the lawn.
Okay.
And, of course, the fertilizer you mentioned, this is something you've purchased already. Is it a fall fertilizer that your husband has got stashed away in the garage?
I don't think he even went out and got it yet. He was waiting until he could get those leaves up.
Okay, yeah, so I was just going to say, if you've put away a bag of fall or winterizing lawn fertilizer and you can't get it down now, though, honestly, I mean, it's a bit chilly, no question, but you could actually put fertilizer out right now. But lift the get the leaves up first, get the fertilizer out, and then walk away. You could do that. I assume you don't have any snow on the ground. And that fertilizer will basically just sit there until the conditions are right for the fertilizer to be released from the little pellets that you're going to drop down. So it's actually not yet too late. I wouldn't fertilize on the snow, but you can certainly fertilize right now onto bare lawns.
Okay. What would you suggest for the fertilizer? What would be the number?
Well, it'll say right on the bag that it's a winterizer or a fall fertilizer.
Okay.
Number will be a very low first number and a fairly high third number and a medium one in between. So, yes, the fall or winterizer fertilizers are low nitrogen, which is the first number, but high potassium, which is the last number. And that just helps the lawn come through in good condition in the spring so that, yes, indeed, you can get out there and top dress and overseed whenever you can once you can walk on the lawn.
Yeah, because it's amazing what the fertilizer can do, because I thought, you know, the lawn, the one fall looked terrible. And in the spring, everybody was saying how marvelous our lawn looked. And then, but if you don't get that fertilizer back on again, then it starts to look pretty sad in, you know, in just a couple of months.
But your top dressing helps too, that when you're top dressing and overseeding, that really, really makes a difference.
Okay, so, but how long, though, should I wait then, even in the spring? Because we always fertilize in the spring. Can I do the fertilizer in the spring and then put the seed down, or wait for doing the fertilizing before we top dress?
No, do your top dressing and overseeding when you can start walking on the lawn, when it is not soggy in the spring.
Okay.
So, might be April, it might be May, it might be March, hard to know. But do that top dressing and overseeding as your priority first.
Yeah.
Then 4 weeks from that date, and you can put out a spring fertilizer. But that's 4 to 6 weeks even, because you're going to do that fall or winterizer fertilizer now. Okay?
Thank you so very, very much.
Very welcome.
Okay. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks for the call there, Diane. Listen, I'm going to give out those numbers quickly, but we have to go to a break in just a second. Again, in Toronto, 416-360-0740. Anywhere else in the province, 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back, Charlie, and I'm pretty sure I got a first-time caller on the line.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, we're back with The Garden Show. I'm Dean Holland, and I'm here with Charlie Dobbin.
Yeah,
and I have a first-time caller on the line there, Charlie. Linda from just north of my neck of the woods, from Midland. How are you this morning, Linda?
I'm great. Thank you, Dean.
Good. I have to officially give you your garden wings, okay? So here you go. There you go.
Oh, thank you.
Welcome. Joe.
Hi. I have a question, Charlie, about a gardenia plant. I got the most beautiful gardenia plant in the spring, and it's constantly dying. I try keeping it. Now I brought it indoors. I feed it good. I don't know why. The leaves just drop off. And I was wondering if you could give me any idea how to keep it over the winter season.
Okay, so when you say, so the leaves fall off, does it set, are there buds on it ever? Do you get any?
There were when I bought it, but no, they dropped off and the leaves start turning black. Yeah. And black,
Okay, gardenias, don't blame yourself. Gardenias are very tough plants to, I mean, we can keep them alive, but it's very hard to have a gardenia thrive in our winter homes. The conditions that they need are exactly opposite to what we have. They want high humidity, the higher the better, you know, 80% humidity, like a sauna would be perfect. They like the heat, the warmth. They want bright, bright light. And believe it or not, they want to be kept constantly moist. So they've got high water needs, high light needs, and high humidity needs. So if you can provide all that. Now, one of the ways you can do that simply is make a pebble tray. So a pebble tray is just like a, it could be a cookie sheet or any kind of a tray that is waterproof. Put some gravel or pebbles into the bottom of the tray. Sit the gardenia pot on top of the gravel or pebbles, and keep water in the tray at all times. That what that will do is that will be constantly evaporating water around the plant, but the plant won't actually be sitting in the water, and that's important.
Okay.
That will help with humidity.
I've been feeding it my vegetable water every night and trying to, I bought a special plant that holds the water. I bought a special pot that holds the water. But it's still not wanting to thrive for me.
When you say
plant so much, my favorite flower, and I'm having a hard time with it.
It was my mom's favorite flower too. But when you say a pot that holds water, it's a slow release, self-watering pot.
No, it's the heavy copper color pot.
Yeah.
That holds the water.
All right. And the other thing is make sure it's not in any drafts. Make sure there's no hot air vent blowing on it. You know, we need to put it in a window, but our windows is where our vents are. So make sure you've got a vent deflector over the vent so there's no hot air blowing on the plant and no cold drafts either. It just really wants a nice tropical atmosphere in your living room. That's all.
Okay. Well, thank you for your advice, Charlie. Appreciate it. And Merry Christmas to you and Dean.
And you too.
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. Thanks very much, Linda. Well, hey. I just got a new idea for a Christmas gift. Maybe a sauna would be good.
To keep
your plants in. Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of gifts for gardeners, I want to share with you one that I love and have had for years. It comes every year and it's published every year. It's called the Toronto and Golden Horseshoe Gardeners Journal.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and so you might have heard about gardeners journals. It's the idea that you track on a seasonal basis all the different things that are working or aren't working in your garden. And you'd be amazed what we forget over the years and how much these journals are such good little memory, you know, just gets you remembering, oh yeah, that was really good that year. I got to do that again. Or, oh yeah, I got to avoid that. So these journals, people have been keeping journals forever and ever, but what's cool about this one is it's highly organized. It comes with tips, weekly tips on things to do both inside and outside. It comes with, graph paper so you can sketch up some designs when you're thinking things. It comes for places to put any photographs, and it's a source book. So it's multi pages of source information from across Southern Ontario. So it's magazines, books, events, radio shows like this one, TV shows, just all kinds of really, really cool stuff. And it is published in Toronto. It has been published for many years. It was all started by Margaret Bennett Alder, and she's now taken a back seat, and the Battersby girls, they call themselves Battersby girls, they now do the publishing. So for more information, anybody who would like to get a hold of this book and share it with a gardening friend, it's just gardenjournals.ca.
Okay.
So gardenjournals.ca. Or you can pick it up at Indigo or Sheridan Nurseries. It's available sort of all over the place. And like I say, it's a wonderful, wonderful source book.
Wow, that sounds like a great gift. Listen, can we do a quick email? Because we heard from Doris a couple of weeks ago now, and she was asking about wintering her strawberry plants. And I'm curious about that. She says here that she listens to your show all the time, and she loves the info that she gets, but she is curious on how to properly winter her strawberry plants.
So Doris didn't tell us where she was writing from. So I can't be very specific because it does make a difference where you're gardening. However, generally speaking, strawberries are pretty tough plants. So depending on, because we usually have them in full sun. They're usually planted into a nice, fertile, well-drained soil. So hopefully they're not in any kind of a soggy spot where water collects. Some strawberries do not like to be kept soggy. Many people will get a hold of something like straw, or they'll do that fall decor around their home at Halloween or Thanksgiving, and then they've got that straw bale kicking around, and tear that all apart and use that around the strawberry plants, not necessarily over top of the strawberries, but you sort of lift the leaves and you put handfuls around the plants. And it's just to keep the plants above ground, keep them dry, keep them clean. And if she is, up even in the Barrie area or your, Collingwood area, I'd be inclined to even put some straw right over top of the strawberries. But, if she's down in St. Catharines or Beamsville, then I wouldn't, you're more likely to cause them to rot with straw on top. So, but they're pretty simple, nothing too complicated. And then be prepared to move that straw away in the spring once the snow melts and things are starting to warm up.
Gotcha. Okay. We have a caller on the line. And hey, it's another first-time caller. So going to Etobicoke this time. Got Gina on the line. How are you this morning, Gina?
Hi there.
Hi. I get to give you your garden wings, my dear.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
You earned them.
My question is about this past summer, I had a real battle with sow bugs or roly-polies. I don't know why this year they were so bad. was it just their time? Or I did put a lot of rocks in my garden. Could that have caused it?
Well, what were they doing that was bothering you?
They were, there was just thousands of them, and they were, you know, eating my plants. And
no, they don't eat live things. They eat dead stuff. They're kind of like ants. They're scavengers. They clean up the garden, believe it or not. So they should. I'd be surprised if you saw. I mean, if there was, I guess if there was quadrillions of them, then they might have resorted to some of the live plant material. But generally, generally, you'll find what we call sow bugs or roly polies. They're like a baby armadillos, right? So they roll into a little tiny ball. Or pill bugs. They turn into a little ball bearing as a way to protect themselves. You'll find composters are usually full of them because they are chowing down on all the decaying plant material in the composter. They also don't like the light. So they're always going to be hiding in dark spots, like under your pots and, like I say, in your composters. Insects do tend to, the populations tend to be cyclical, so it is possible that it was just a really big year. It also could be that you did something in your garden, you added a bunch of organic material perhaps this spring, and they love all that organic stuff. So they might have just, you might have seen a population increase because of that, but I wouldn't really stress them. There is a product out there made by Miracle-Gro or Scotts, which is a slug and snail poison, which poisons them but does not hurt the garden at all, and that actually fertilizes the garden and does not hurt birds or pets or anything. So a slug and snail bait. Now, whether that would work on sow bugs, I'm not sure whether they'd be attracted to it, but it's worth a try because, like I say, it won't hurt anything. And if you had a lot of rain or you have a very shady garden, that might be part of it as well, that they just love the cool darkness in shady spots. So it might just have been a kind of a coming together of a whole bunch of things that you ended up with all the sow bugs in the whole neighborhood.
So they're not eating my plants, and something else must have been.
Oh, yes, that's where the slugs and snails come in. See, the conditions for sow bugs are also the conditions for slugs and snails. So, yes, even more importantly, put it on your Christmas list that you want a package or a pouch of slug and snail bait. It's available anywhere in Ontario. It is completely non-toxic to anything except those horrible little slugs and snails. And we don't mind killing them at all. Or I don't.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
You're very welcome.
Thanks, Gina.
Bye-bye. Yeah,
bye-bye. I was just laughing there. I thought, that's like almost, for the kids, my kids, that would be almost akin to getting coal in your stocking, getting a package of slug killers.
No. We're talking gifts for gardeners here, my
friend. Right, of course.
Cool tools, including killing machines.
That's great. Great. I have another email here, but before I get to that, I do want to give out your email address if anybody has a question and they'd rather do that, although we'd love you to call. And we do have lines open, so please give us a call. But if you want to email Charlie, that's c.dobbin@mzmedia.com. Okay, so, you know, then you can do it any time of the night or day and send her a question. And some people even send you photos, too, don't they, Charlie?
Quite often, yeah. That's the great thing about email that we don't get, obviously, on the radio. When somebody needs, you know, what's wrong with my plant question and can send a photo, it's far easier to diagnose than over the radio.
Well, and it does seem like this gentleman sent you a photo here. He said, we live in a 110-year-old house in High Park of Toronto. We have a bush in the backyard that was here when they moved in 30 years ago. He says, in the fall, it goes a very unusual and beautiful color transformation. Most of the time, it's mostly red to yellow, but for a few days, just a few days, it's a purple color. And he says he sent you a photo, and he's wondering if it is Barbary.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this is from John. Thank you for the email and the photograph. And yes, indeed, it is Barbary. So Barbary, as you might know, because I know you're a pretty avid gardener, Dean, Barbary, it's called that because it has barbs. It's a very thorny plant. Now, it was a popular hedge plant. Barbary, the proper name is Berberis vulgaris. It's quite a popular ornamental plant you know, even like 100 years ago, 50 years ago, it would be planted as a hedge because nobody in their right mind would try and ever cross through this hedge.
Right.
Because it's like barbed wire, really. I think what John has in his old home, his old High Park home, over 100-year-old home, is a very old variety, the one I'm referring to from way back. So that is a non-native plant. It is very dense, very spiny, and of course it does give a beautiful fall color. Yes, purplish green leaves throughout the growing season, and then a nice bright pinky purple in the fall. The thing is that happened was that there was a recognition that this plant, and I believe it's exactly the plant that John's got, is a plant that carries a disease that can infect wheat. That's wheat with a stem rust, which is a very serious fungal disease of wheat. Well, you say to yourself, who cares in High Park? Nobody's growing wheat in High Park, so it's fine if he's got this Barberry, even if it's the host of the stem rust. But because it's such a serious disease, this plant was widely made illegal. Like, it's you cannot propagate that plant, you cannot sell that plant, you cannot plant that plant, but if you own it, you can keep it. It's like grandfathered in, sort of thing. So bottom line is, that's the variety he's got. In the last 25 years, a whole bunch of breeding was done, and some varieties of Barberry were introduced onto the market which do not host the stem rust of wheat. So you can still go to the store, you can buy a fresh, you know, there's golden Barberries, there's purple Barberries, there's little short, round, mounded ones, there's tall, waterfall, arching Barberry. There's all kinds of beautiful Barberry out there, but I'm pretty sure the one that John has is that very old variety. So whatever you do, John, enjoy it. Don't propagate it, and recognize that it is an illegal plant to have. It's kind of like, you know, it keep it, enjoy it, keep it under control, but it's pretty. I mean, there's no question. You are allowed to keep that plant. What's the other nice thing about it is that it provides a shelter for ticks. Well, maybe not that cool, but it is a deer-resistant plant. So since deer don't go near it, ticks tend to hide in it. So if you're in a tick, high tick area, population area, then recognize Barberry can be a tick shelter.
Hmm. Wow, that's crazy. So marijuana used to be the illegal plant to have in your garden, and now it's Barberry.
I know, I was thinking, it's kind of like growing cannabis in your front yard.
Yeah.
But no, you can grow cannabis in your front yard.
You can now. Exactly. We have to go to a short break, but when we come back, we've got some callers on the line, okay? We'll be right back.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Morning, Dean, you there? I'm not hearing Dean. All right, I'm going to share another gifts for gardeners. If you've got gardeners on your list that need or dream about cool tools for the garden, I mentioned the Gardener's Journal, which comes out of the Toronto area. And, you know, it says right on it, it's for the Toronto and Golden Horseshoe. But seriously, it's for the all of Southern Ontario. But you know, it's another great spot to pick up a gift certificate or a really nice option for somebody on your list is the Urban Nature Store. So very simple website, urbannaturestore.ca. They do have physical stores, a lot of them all across Southern Ontario. But I've enjoyed some of they do birds and bird feed, bird accessories. They have all kinds of cool binoculars, pond accessories. I got a nice little solar powered fountain from them that goes in my bird bath, which I love, and the birds love it. So that has been a real bonus as well. Just having that movement, that water movement, completely solar powered, so no electricity required. Doesn't work, obviously, when a cloud comes over, but the birds love it. They bathe in my bird bath, and I've got a fancy new bird bath to go with my solar powered little pond or little fountain. So yeah, really a very great store with a lot of great accessories. So take a look at the urbannaturestore.ca and see if anything jumps out at you and your gardening buddies that you can pick up something for them.
I mean, Charlie, I got a caller on the line. How are you? You're good?
I'm good.
Good. Okay. I've got Sophie on the line from my hometown of Hamilton. How are you today, Sophie?
Good morning to both of you. Thank you so much, Charlie. Hi. I have, I'm confused about my Mandevilla.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, during the winter in the house, it grew beautifully. It had all these long strands trying to reach up to the ceiling.
Yeah.
So springtime, I cut all that down, took it outside. Mm-hmm. It did nothing. It stayed green, but no bloom, no nothing. So now, wintertime, I'm bringing it back in the house, and guess what? Long strands, it woke up. What did I do wrong?
Well, you know, I think what you did was the right thing. So, you know, I'm just... You obviously had it in full sun when it was outside all summer?
Sun, yes, and then shade again as the day moved on.
Oh, I see. You moved it around?
No, it stayed in the same spot.
Okay. Oh, I see what you're saying. Right, so it had morning sun, you mean, and that was like a couple hours morning sun?
Yes.
Okay. What I would do is... number one, next spring, when you take it outside, when we are frost-free, you will put it in, start it in a lower light situation. But if you can move it into a spot where it's going to get 6 hours of direct sunlight minimum every day, you'll have a better chance of flowers being formed. The other thing is start consistently fertilizing it in March and fertilize every single month, starting in March through till July, with a flowering plant fertilizer of one kind or another. Mm-hmm. Choose whatever kind of one grabs you or what you've got in your cupboard. For now, though, for the winter, you do have it in a sunny location, I assume, in your house?
Yes, I'm getting a sun from the windows, yes.
Right, and the windows don't have shears or curtains or anything?
No.
Okay. And just, I'll let you know what the optimal conditions are. The plant wants as much, the Mandevilla, summer and winter, wants as much sun as you can give it. So maximize the light on it. The cooler temperatures are better. I know most of our homes are kept, you know, 70-ish Fahrenheit, but this plant over the winter really wants more like 55, 60 degrees Fahrenheit or 12 to 15 Celsius. And the watering is important in the sense that you want to water sparingly.
You only want
to water it enough to keep the potting mix from becoming bone dry. So that means you are going to, none of this sort of, like in the summer, you know how we pour the water on and then 5 or 6 days later or even 2 days later, we have to do it again. Not in the winter. In the winter, you are just going to keep this plant alive barely by barely watering it. Now, you know, you have a moisture meter if it's a deep pot, or know the depth, know the weight of the pot. You know, you don't want to kill it with no water, but you do need to water it very sparingly. And the cooler temperatures will help with it not using much water as well. If there's any possibility, you can move it into like an unused bedroom or some part of your house where it's bright and sunny, but you can keep it cooler than the rest of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so the only way that it would bloom would be by feeding it fertilizer for flowering plants. And keeping it more in 6 hours sunlight and then in the shade?
Well, usually if a plant is in about 6 hours of sunlight, then you're right. The sun is moving, so it'll be shady perhaps in the morning and shady perhaps in the evening. I mean, the southern exposure is the best. It's the brightest, the longest number of hours, both inside and outside our homes. And a Mandevilla really, I think probably all those long viney things you're getting is probably more water-based. And remember as well, to get plants, you know, too much water, sorry when I say water-based, but when we look after our plants too well, sometimes they don't flower. Too much loving care stops the flowering. So you do have to, that's where the stress comes in. You're going to stress that plant by watering it less.
So loving it is stressing it. Well,
no. Loving it is making it just be a happy green plant. You want flowers, though, so you have to stress it to get the flowers.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Right? It's just going to be a happy green plant if you keep loving it that much.
Oh, thank you, Charlie. Okay.
Thanks so much, Sophie.
For your help, I appreciate it. Thank you, both of you. Take care.
Thank you very much. We have to take a short break there, Charlie, but then I'll have another question when we come back.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Hey, we're back on The Garden Show, and Charlie, this may never happen again on the show. Our last caller was from my hometown of Hamilton, and now we get to go to my home of the last 18 years. We get to go to Collingwood. We got Lauren on the line. How are you, Lauren?
Good, thank you.
Morning.
Good morning, Charlie. I have a wisteria plant. Mm-hmm. It's a vine, and it's got to be at least 16 years old, and it's never bloomed.
All right. So, and you planted this plant, did you?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Was it blooming when you bought it?
No.
All right. So that's one of the tips for anybody else who's thinking about buying and planting wisteria. Try and buy a plant that is blooming when you buy it, because then at least you know it blooms. They do tend to be a little challenging to get to bloom. And we always say they've got to be at least minimum 6 to 7 years old before they'll even think about blooming. So they don't bloom as young plants. They have to get a little older. Now, wisteria can live for a very, very long time. So a six-year-old wisteria might seem old odds, but it's actually a baby. There, I have a great photo I use with my students at Durham College of a wisteria vine in Japan that is 144, well, it's now 150 years old. It is just incredible in bloom. But your job as an owner of a wisteria is to prune it. Have you got it growing on something very, very sturdy, like a fence or
Yes, I have a vine, a pergola, I guess it's called, and I prune it every fall.
Okay, well, you're going to have to prune it more often, I'm afraid. Yeah, so when you prune, is there anything in particular you've been pruning, any particular parts of the plant you've been concentrating on?
Well, basically the top, because it grows up at least 10 feet.
Right. Well, so the
you have these long veins that grow out.
That's right, long shoots, and kind of like the mandevilla that Sophie was just talking about, that, you know, it's got this crazy big, long green shoots. They just shoot out, you know, a meter overnight almost. So, okay, so wisteria, I'm just quickly, because I avoid wisteria myself. It just is quite a challenging plant, but it's absolutely gorgeous when it's blooming. So pruning is the secret to good flowering, because wisteria only blooms on new wood, so new growth. So you prune in late winter, not the fall, but late winter. You remove at least half of the prior year's growth, leaving just a few buds per stem. So what you've been trimming off in the fall, have you been sort of taking it down by half, or have you been taking all that green stuff off?
Well, pretty well the green stuff at the top, the very top, maybe about 3 feet that you cut off, but the rest is all on the vine that grows up.
Right, so don't just prune the top. You've got to look at this plant as a whole plant. You have to look at the tips, like you're saying, you know, the tips where the growth has been happening. You've probably got lots and lots of branches with lots and lots of green tips on them. So take a look this spring. You can even, sometime when you're outside in the winter, just study this plant with no leaves on it and recognize that you have to take all of last year's growth back by about a half before spring. That includes stuff at the top, at the sides, at the bottom. So you got to get out your pruners, not today, but, you know, in February or March, maybe even late March, because you're in Collingwood on a dry day, And you just, it's one of those things that it's, you need to thicken it up by taking down that newer growth. You also control the size of the plant. And you also, when here in Ontario, I know that typically we'll also do another shearing or pruning in July after this plant blooms. So your first pruning is early spring or late winter. Hopefully you get some flowers happening in May and June, but those flowers will form on last year's growth. So you don't want to take off all of last year's growth. Otherwise, you won't get flowers. And then later in July, after the flowering, there's another shearing, another cutting it back. It's a plant that just wants to absolutely take over.
Yeah, okay, Charlie, thank you. I just wanted to mention that the trunk of the plant is at least a good inch and a half in diameter.
And it's going to get a lot bigger.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks for calling. Wow. Yeah, people don't realize, and they'll put a wisteria, just so you know, Dean, on a pergola or a fence,
yeah,
and they don't realize how big and heavy these plants get. And so that's why a sturdy support is so important.
I had no idea that it could live. That's an incredible 150 years old for a wisteria. That's crazy.
It's gorgeous. When flowering, gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have anything on your wish list? I was thinking about that on the way in. I thought, I don't think there's anything I could get you that you don't already have.
Yeah, for me. Could you get me a windbreak?
I will. I'll try my best. I'll look into that. I'll Google that.
Yeah, that's probably my biggest issue is the wind. But whatever. Things are going to grow in eventually. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we're almost at a racetrack. So
we are.
Thanks so much for making the drive down this morning.
Oh,
I appreciate
all
your support. And thanks, Carlos, for all your help as well, and to our great callers. And we'll do it again next week.
Okay, will do. I look forward to it, Charlie.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.